Hello everyone, welcome to the Pentecostal Pen, and my name is Raymart Lugi. I am your host today for this podcast episode. If you have been blessed by any of our episodes or by this whole podcast channel, please do us a favor. If you are using iTunes or any podcast app that gives you an opportunity to give us a rating, please do so and make this channel more available to other people. We would like to reach out to more people, listeners, and be a blessing to them. Today we are with Brother Brock Chavis from Missouri, from our headquarters. He is our director for the Multicultural Ministries of the United Pentecostal Church International, and he's been serving in that capacity since 2017. Brother Chavis, thank you for joining us today.
It's an honor to be with you.
Our whole interview will be about the discussion of multicultural ministries, racism, prejudice. But before we proceed with our questions here, could you help us define what racism is?
First, let me say that I believe, according to the Word of God, that racism is a sin before God. Mm-hmm. But racism, in definition, is antagonism or discrimination or even prejudice that's directed against someone of a different race based on the opinion that that person's own race is superior. So racism is looking down on other races, that they're inferior to your own. Racism is the elevating of one's race above others. But prejudice, most if not all people have some form of prejudice, some natural prejudice, because prejudice, going from that root word I'm just kind of thinking outside the box here, but prejudging, prejudice is like preconceived opinions, mm-hmm, that is not based on reason or actual experience. There's preferences. There are things that you would expect or prefer to have a certain way. And while prejudice can be subconscious, prejudice is obviously, we see many examples of prejudice being overt and intentional, but there are cases and times where people can be prejudiced and not even realize it, not even being aware that they're being prejudiced. So I would say that both issues are important. While racism is definitely a sin and wrong, prejudice is one of those things that it's wrong, but someone can, I believe, have prejudice and not it be intending to be racist, yeah, or intending to be, right, yeah, hurtful to another. But there again, I also believe when awareness comes, then that prejudice should be resolved.
Do you think racism is just a cultural thing, something that is born in our society, yeah, or is it spiritual?
Going along with what I said first there regarding a spiritual thing, I believe that racism can be cultural in that views can be taught and they can be passed down from generation to generation through family. I think that unchallenged, and the key word here is unchallenged, I think that someone can be racist against another culture or another race of people because their parents were, or they have family that were, or their, you know, dad, granddad, or people that are close to them in their circle of influence. They just kind of gather it from them. And of course that could be debated, you know, can you truly hate something you don't know? Right. Can you truly be racist when you don't know someone, or are you just ignorant? But I believe that when we're talking about racism, this is something that gets lumped into it all the time, whether you define true racism as knowing full well the race of someone and hating them because of it, or hating someone because everybody you know hates them. So whichever way you look at it, it's part of the discussion. So that being said, I think there is a cultural aspect to it, which can be overcome.
Right.
When you begin to understand a person, you begin to see the things that they're challenged with, the things that they are strong in, the things that they fear, and you have times of vulnerability with people of other cultures. There is a natural human compassion that rises in many people who were once prejudiced towards another culture of people when they actually got to know someone of that race and got an understanding of that person. They found that they were not racist after all, that they did not hate that culture of people. It was all built on their own cultural feelings that had been passed down, and awareness was able to overcome that.
But just an honest question, do we still see racism in our churches today, probably just in North America? And if yes, how are these manifested in our churches?
Well, you've asked an important question. It's not an easy question, but it is an important question. And I think what we have to do is we have to be honest and logical. And so I'll choose my words like this. I think overall, when you take a very general look, we're not seeing racism and prejudice as a prevalent spirit and attitude. But if we're going to be totally acknowledging all things, you know, anywhere you have a lot of people, there's going to be somewhere where these issues rise up. Because it's the nature of humanity to be fallen and to be caught up in these kind of hatreds. So I would say, if it's there among our churches, it's not necessarily obvious. What I would say to tag along with that, sir, is that while I personally don't see a lot of obvious and overt aggressive racism, what I do notice is there are lots of cases of insensitivity and ignorance. And what you find in these cases is maybe it's not intentional, but the damage can be very much the same.
Right.
The fallout, the after effects, it can be very much the same as intentional racism. So I would say currently today, and I travel the fellowship, as you know, I'm blessed and privileged at this time. Just about every weekend, I'm in a church somewhere in North America. You know, I see a lot of churches that are very multicultural. I'm in a lot of churches that are just, you know, majority or primarily one culture with a smattering of a few other families of different cultures. I would say that I see the trend going more and more multicultural. I very few occasions am I going into a church or being invited to a church nowadays where I'm finding it to be completely monocultural. There is always other cultures and ethnicities that are a part of the church. And so I would say currently, while I'm not going to say racism no longer exists in the church, I'm saying I don't see it as an overall prevalent thing. But in the past, in my lifetime, I've witnessed it personally. I've seen things with my own eyes. I've experienced firsthand testimonies from things that happened to people. So from what I saw myself and was present to witness, and then what I got firsthand from people that I felt were reliable sources who had situations, it's not a distant memory. It's something that's close in our history.
Right. You've mentioned about your travels in North America. You've been to a lot of churches in your ministry, your position as the director. Do you think a church can be unintentional in this reaching out to other cultures and be a multicultural church?
Well, I feel that's a very good question. So taking it in two pieces, the ones, if I'll say it in my own words, can a church accidentally be or organically be multicultural without it being an approach or a strategy or intention?
Right.
I think it does happen. There are, you know, so many places in North America now that are so widely diverse that it's just gonna be that way. If you're just, as a church leader, if you're just not simply ignorant to how to treat people, and you do love people and you do make people feel welcome on the simplest of levels, there's gonna be more than one culture in the church. The Northeast, the Northwest, just about everywhere you go, all the major areas in Canada, I would say.
Right.
And then all your metro cities, places like this are just teeming with many, many diverse cultures. On the same hand, sometimes there's a false sense of security. I'll just give you some city names, for instance, and just to kind of make it, let's say you're in New York City, Miami, Vancouver, Toronto, Detroit, Chicago, San Francisco, San Diego. If you're a church in cities like that, and and this is obviously not a reflection on any of those churches that are there, but if you're in places like that, metro areas of North America, and you have one to three cultures in your church, let's say you have Caucasians, African Americans, and Hispanics, to have the sense of security that you're effectively a multicultural church in those settings, I think is false. Yes, in theory, you could say, yeah, we're a multicultural church, but let's say you had a congregation of Caucasians, African Americans, and Hispanics in a rural area of North America, in many places in the South or in the Midwest. That would be an extreme accomplishment in many places. But in some of these cities that I've mentioned, where you're going to have dozens and dozens of spoken languages within a rock's throw from the church facility, if you only have two to four or even five cultures in your church, I think it's probably worth your time to reassess and say, okay, are we really a multicultural church in this community, or are we just barely scratching the surface? So, all that being said, I do believe that while the point here is not to criticize, I do believe that by being intentional and strategic, we will become a multicultural church. I think we have to value it, and I think we have to plan for it. I think we have to pray for it, and I think there are some spiritual things that we should do, prayer and fasting, seeking the Lord for it. But I also think there are some practical things that we should do that will definitely assist in that. For instance, if you are a church in a multicultural community and you want to be known in your community as a multicultural church, you want to be inclusive to all cultures, you want people to feel welcome. One way we often miss that opportunity is by not cultivating leadership from the diverse cultures of the community. And so when people come to the church of different cultures, a lot of times they can be welcome, they can be made to feel at home and comfortable, but there's a glaring fact that they cannot overcome, whether they see it obviously or it's a subconscious thing. It takes them a while to really realize. If there are no people who do music there, who sing there, who lead services there, who speak at the microphone, who lead departments, or who preach there of their own culture, sooner or later they're going to notice it. And what I believe is that this is sort of a invisible barrier sometimes. And most people, many people who might listen to this podcast may not have the experience of going into a church and not seeing anybody who looks like them in a leadership role. But for those who have that experience, they will relate to what I'm saying immediately and say, yes, when I went to a church that had no people of my culture, my mind was saying to me, is there a place for me here? Can I grow in leadership here? And that same person would say, when I went to a church that was multicultural, and in my first several services there, I saw someone of my own culture who was playing music or leading worship or singing on the platform or involved in the service schedule or preaching. It immediately told me that this was a church for me, that this was a place for my culture as well. So that's just a practical approach. And let me qualify that because I want to make the point here, Ray Mart, that I'm not talking about tokenism. I'm not talking about placing people in positions simply to meet a visual quota per se. What I'm talking about is authentic, intentional mentorship. And that goes back to the heart of the leader. It goes back to the heart of the church staff. What we must do is we must love cultures and value them and seek to develop leaders from those cultures. In the case of tokenism, or as we say in our American culture, the terminology affirmative action, in those cases, the person who is hurt the most with that is the person who realizes that the only reason I'm being used here and the only reason I'm being valued in this leadership role is because I meet a color qualifier.
Right.
That's extremely damaging. So we have to be intentional and we have to be genuine. And so oftentimes people have such a desire and a zeal to be multicultural that they start with step one being, let's put people on our platform. And that can have problems because what if that person is not in fact qualified? And I think that as much as I want to see churches utilize people from every culture in their community, at the same time, I'm very adamant that we need to cultivate leadership, help Right. leadership grow. We can't force it. And when we force things like that, we create problems for ourselves. I think it takes intentional mentorship. And that does not mean you're overlooking the majority culture. If there's valuable, quality leaders that have a desire, the question is not reducing or narrowing time, it's spending more time.
Right. I think that's really an important strategy in if you are wanting to become a multicultural church. I've been to some multicultural churches, and one thing I really see that is really good is that there's always that leader of that culture that will rise up, you know, and then if he or she is connected to the senior pastor, then because some people fear, you know, that the church is going to be divided, that this guy that he's going to mentor or disciple to reach out to this culture will just one day get out of the mother church, or there's fears like that. But I think if a pastor will be able to connect to that leader of a certain culture or group and keep that, you know, discipleship process, it will not be a problem.
Yeah. Through the years, I've heard this, I've seen this, I've even experienced it in our local church. These things are happening. They do happen. It's a fear that's out there, and at times there have been situations that happened that warranted the fear. But let me just give you just a really simple analogy. I have a 3-year-old son, and he has a little small bicycle that has some training wheels on it. It's really small. He rides it around our house. I want him to be able to ride a bicycle out of the yard without training wheels one day. And the fact is, if he's going to learn to do that, then I am expecting that he's going to fall down some. I'm expecting that it's not going to be happiness and joy and perfect success at every step of the way. Learning to grow and growing includes some setbacks, some falling down. And I think that as a pastor, rather than shying away or turning away from the opportunity to develop men and women in leadership because of our fears that they could somehow turn away from us and draw people away from us, I think rather what we got to do is double down on our mentorship and encouraging them and work to create strong bonds of loyalty and relationship that prevent those things from happening. Sometimes it's going to happen, but you know what? A soul's a soul.
Yeah, it's just and worth it.
Yeah, we can't not win the souls because we're afraid, and we can't be hindered in winning the souls. If we've got an opportunity to use a leader who's going to help us reach many more, then let's invest in it and do it. And sometimes we may get hurt, but hey, this is leadership. You know, this is what it takes.
One good thing about, you know, multicultural church is the diversity of cultures and many ministries out of that cultures too. But do you think diversity is a biblical principle, a strong biblical principle? And would you give us some examples from the Bible about diversity?
I do think it's a biblical principle, and there's a number of things we could point to. In 1 Corinthians 12, you have the whole discussion about the members of the body. If the foot should say, because I'm not a hand, I don't belong to the body, that would not make it any less a part of the body. The ear should say, because I'm not an eye, I don't belong to the body, that would not make it any less a part of the body.
Right.
If the whole body were an eye, where would the sense of smell or hearing be? If the whole body were an ear, then where would the sense of smell or sight be? But as it is, God has arranged members of the body, each one of them as he chose. And if all were a single member, then where would the body be? We are better together. That's 1 Corinthians.
Right.
Here's a very, very simple, I think a very simple approach to diversity in the Bible. And I don't know if everyone who's listening today is ready for this, because this is just way too simple. God made us this way. It's in the Bible. It's clear that the Bible discusses cultures and different colors of skin and different languages in the Bible. We have different languages because God made it so.
Right.
And obviously, we all have our particular shade of skin color because God made it so. And, you know, maybe some people are looking for some type of monument of scriptures or empirical evidence. I think it gets very simple. We are different because God made us different. He designed us that way. I really do not like it when I hear church leaders say we don't want to have a problem around here with these kind of things. You know, we're colorblind. God's colorblind. I just want to tell you, God is not colorblind. He's absolutely not colorblind. God created us all in the particular shades and colors, if you will, that we are. What God is value. Right. He values people. He created us this way. It is He that have made us and not we ourselves. Sometimes there's, you know, the Bible talks about different examples of people. You look through the New Testament, you find diversity in culture, in language, in nationality. It's there. It's very clear. Even when Jesus, you know, chooses His disciples in a very narrow part of the world, in a very narrow time, He chooses people of all walks of life and professions and abilities and giftings. The Bible talks even about diversities of gifts. And so there's probably a lot more we could say about that. To me, the Bible is clear from start to finish, even if in some of the most very simple examples that I've given about diversity.
I like what you said, how you said God is not colorblind, because are people or churches, I would say, that they think that, you know, we should just be of just one culture, just eradicate all the other cultures. There's just one Jesus culture in the church, and, you know, just let the other cultures assimilate to this one culture. Do you think it is healthy for people to just leave their culture and assimilate to the culture where they're at?
I don't think it's healthy at all. I absolutely don't. I think that that God created us, and when you look at a life that's being transformed and being discipled to come into the church and being a part of the body of Christ, you see the development of people, and there are spiritual things, and then there are cultural things.
Right.
And every once in a while, there are cultural things that also are things that need to be repented of and stopped. But there are many cultural things that are not sinful. And as an example, because I don't want that to be misleading, if you look back and you study the pages of North American history, you talk about Native American. Just about any picture you might find of a Native American man going back into the pioneer days, even in the days of the early settlers, you're going to find Native American people who were not fully dressed from head to toe, you know, the men with no shirts. And obviously, that is, when we talk about modesty, there are developmental things that must happen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm half Native American. Our people, we don't walk around today immodest.
Right.
So there are sometimes things that are, it was cultural among Native Americans of that day to perhaps have an immodest appearance. And if someone was trying to continue that in this day coming into the church, then that cultural thing would need to be addressed, because immodesty is not appropriate. There are many things that are cultural that are absolutely to be valued and encouraged. There are many things that are cultural that are not sinful, that are not even practices that are even addressed in the Bible. And there, you know, different types of clothing, different styles of fashion, music, food, conversations, speech mechanisms. There's so many things you could get into. I think that when someone comes to the Lord, they come into the church, those differences that they have only add to the body. They don't take away from the body. So the body thrives on those differences. The body thrives on those cultural things. I really don't agree with the idea that when someone comes in the church, you know, we all become like one simple entity. We all become just like each other. I think there's going to be some uniformity in standards of dress, holiness, and things like that.
Right.
But, you know, you can have a woman can wear a long dress that's made of one fabric and one color, and it be modest. And another female can wear a long dress that's made of an entirely different fabric and be multicolored and still be modest. And those colors can represent their culture. And both of them are modest. So we're not sacrificing modesty or holiness, but what we are is allowing for cultural things to develop.
Right.
I would say that if there's a situation where everyone is just forced to becoming one entity, spiritually we're becoming one and falling into unity, but our different cultural nuances, when they are not falling into categories that are inappropriate, those things I think should be celebrated, valued, and they add to who we are as a congregation.
Thank you for tuning into this episode. I hope you had a great time. I'm thankful for all the insights that Brother Chavis shared with us in this episode. And please take note that this is only part one of this interview, and we look forward to uploading the next part in the following weeks. Thank you again. God bless, and I hope you have a great day.